All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, good evening. Welcome to American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. This is episode 40. Today's date, January 12th, 2022. Now, I have what I think is going to be something very entertaining, historically valuable, but enlightening to many people to hear about a certain particular part of history that I have mentioned various times throughout previous episodes, and how it really, a lot of it pertains to the future of the world, the possible future of America if we continue to go the route that we are. But I want to just talk about this because history is interesting. History is dynamic and it's bold and it's true. It's gritty, it's ugly, it's dark, it's disturbing. And we need to familiarize ourselves with history more so that we will learn to weaponize history so that we can fight the evils of the future. We need to weaponize history and teach the young men and women of the world that history can repeat itself. That's why knowledge is forbidden in so many dictatorial countries. Knowledge was destroyed by the communists and the socialists, by kingdoms, and we have a small amount of time now in America where we should be pushing out as much historical knowledge as possible so that we can educate an ignorant mass of people who have not been fully read into history. They only get snippets here and there. And when I say ignorant, I don't mean that you are foolish or that you are silly or stupid. I mean you have been willfully told something completely different. For as long as it takes me to do this, we are going to investigate and break down the Nazi Empire. We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be right back.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day, and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
And welcome back. This is American Vindicta. Today's, I guess you could say, goal is to entice you to want to listen to history. Now, we're going to go over history and some things that I have probably mentioned multiple times on here, especially about Nazi concentration camps and death camps, the Gestapo and the Order Police. And if you can go back and listen to some of my previous episodes, and I really expounded upon those sections. So we're only going to briefly glance through them here. But if you want a better understanding of it, please go back and see my previous episodes. But just for a little tidbit of information, did you know that Operation Paperclip, which President Truman signed in September of 1946, approved the operation of T-Force, and T-Force was a specialized unit of the military that was detaining high-valued scientists and engineers from the German Nazi Party and holding them, I think it's in the Frankfurt Castle. And what they would do is they would then, it's the Kronsberg Castle outside of Frankfurt. And what they would do is they would then screen all of these scientists. And the Joint Chiefs of Staff were really looking for a certain type of aid to a new war against Soviets. And the Soviets took well over 2,000, up to I think 6,000 German scientists, to include their families, and relocated them into Soviet Russia. But America was in a pinch, and we had to find as many as possible. And we, for the most part, got a lot of the higher notoriety Nazi scientists. Now, obviously, Wernher von Braun, the father of the V2 rocket, which was used to level part of Britain, was a bit of a madman at the enormous bunker. This structure is just unreal. And we're going to talk about these Nazi superstructures, but at this facility where he had Jews that were worked to death to help build the V2 rockets that he would then use to guide the rocket into, you know, the Allied militaries and then kill Allied soldiers. That man was captured by the U.S. military and then was taken back here to America and became the father of NASA. So, just a little quick history. Operation Paperclip, approved in 1946. NASA, established in 1958. And in 1959, the American Nazi Party was founded. So, for many of my friends out there, and for many other Americans who don't believe the Nazis wherever in America, you are very wrong. George Lincoln Rockwell founded the party in 1959 with the mission of killing all Jews, sending blacks to Africa, and furthering other racial policies. And the party ventured into politics into 1964 when Rockwell ran for president. Rockwell was assassinated in 1967 by John Patler, who was a former member of Rockwell's group. But the party's legacy continued, leading to the formation of several offshoots. And I believe up until about 1977, these groups kind of started to disappear. And in 1977, one of those groups was the National Socialist Party of America. Now, me and Dave Hodges, who we have a joint venture on the Common Sense Show. We have the Doug and Dave Intel Report, and we are going to start to cover a little bit of the Nazi Empire, and me more especially. I don't care if it takes me 6 months to break this down to you. I'm going to uncover every stone possible about the Nazi Empire. And what I find is interesting is that we see a lot of the ideology within our Democratic fellows and some Republicans, and we see a lot of the, how would you say, the jesting that the politicians of the Nazi Party and the propagandists would do now within our mainstream media, within our extreme cultures of politics. And a lot of it really crosses a lot of neutral ground. And I find it to be very similar in a lot of ways that in Nazi Germany, you could not be a Nazi or support the party. In America, you cannot not be a liberal or support the LGBTQRS club or abortion or these liberal theatrics that they love to go through, like the new Green Deal and Build Back Better. And if you don't support it, well, you're the enemy. Well, it was the same thing in Nazi Germany. So did we, you know, switch hands from the Aryan race to the magical creatures of Never Never Land? Because that's what it feels like to me. If you've been to a lot of these protests, a lot of these riots that have happened recently, for any of you journalists out there, you'll probably understand that the ideologies of hate and the worshiping of hate is very comparison from the way the Nazis were to the way the far-left extremists are. And I can tell you this much. Yes, Antifa walks around with a hammer and sickle. Yes, they worship Mao. They worship Lenin. They're all Marxists. However, the Marxists, the communists, killed more than the Nazi party did. So we need to take that into consideration. And after we get done expounding upon the Nazi empire, we are going to explore communism. And we're going to uncover as many backdoor deals that our government has done with them. And we're going to leave no stone unturned with them. I've been doing research all day, and for quite a long time, for years actually, about the Nazi Party. And if we're really lucky, we're going to be able to get a couple guests on the show, which will be a new part of this show, getting guests on, guest speakers to help teach us more about the Nazi Party and their specialties into it. And just to keep this level, what we have to do now, I'm very sorry, but we have to talk about the beginning of the Nazi Party, and we're going to lead all the way up to the end of the Nazi Party. That way, when we start to jump around and start to talk about a lot of the stuff that people have made TV shows about, people have made movies about, the conspiracy theories, the sci-fi films that are requested to be made about this type of stuff that the Nazis were into, it'll be easier for you to have that context once you know the history of the Nazi Empire. And what do I mean by that? Well, we are going to talk about the coming of Adolf Hitler. We are going to talk about the military conquest of the Nazi Party. We're going to go over the death camps, the mass murder, the Gestapo order police, which we've already gone through. We're going to talk about Nazi spies, the Aryan master race theory. We're going to talk about the SS sorcerers and the SS Castle of Doom. We're going to talk about Nazi superstructures, Nazi scientists. We're going to talk about the Nazis and their interesting relationship with maybe aliens and the Nazi Bell. We're going to talk about the Nazi technology, their weapons, their super weapons. We're going to go over Hitler's death or the conspiracies around if Hitler really died. We're going to talk about the thousands of miles of Nazi escape tunnels and safe houses. And then we're going to talk about something that not very many people know about, but is a part of history. Operation High Jump. Now, if I am very lucky, I will be able to get a guest speaker on who I find to be one of the foremost experts of Operation High Jump, and that is Steve Quayle. And Steve wrote a great book, Empire Under the Ice. I suggest anyone who is really into the Nazi Empire and fascinated by the feats that these madmen were able to accomplish, please check out Operation High Jump, Nazi Empire Under the Ice. It's on Steve Quayle's website. Get them while they're still there. That is a gem of a book. Now, there's another part of this that we are going to then escape from. Once we've dissected the Nazi Empire, once we really got down, chewed past the meat to the bone, we're going to talk about one of the greatest hat tricks that the Nazis ever did. The Third Reich and their escape to America. We're going to talk about Operation Paperclip. We're going to talk about NASA. We're going to talk about Nazis and hospitals, the American Nazi Party, and then we're going to talk about a few other things that, for right now, I'm not going to mention. I'm just going to tease you into it. We're going to talk about some conspiracies from Nazis to current politicians. Stay tuned. Stay with me. We're going to go to a break. And hopefully I don't bore you to death here in a second. But we're going to go through history, ladies and gentlemen. And I think you're going to enjoy it. We'll be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it. Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to American Vindicta. I am your host, Doug Thornton. We are going to take a trip down memory lane, and we are going to visit the Nazi Party. Now, the Nazi Socialist German Workers' Party, or the Nazi Party, grew into a mass movement in rural Germany through totalitarian means from 1933 to 1945, under the leadership of Adolf Hitler, who lived from 1889 to 1945, assumingly. The Nazi Party was founded in 1919, initially as the German Workers' Party. The group promoted German pride and anti-Semitism and expressed dissatisfaction with the terms of the Treaty of Versailles, which was the 1919 peace settlement that ended World War I from 1914 to 1918. The Treaty of Versailles required Germany to make numerous concessions and reparations. Hitler joined the party the year it was founded and became its leader in 1921. Hitler himself also fought in World War I and was decorated for his military service. In 1933, Hitler became Chancellor of Germany, and his Nazi government soon assumed dictatorial powers. After Germany's defeat in World War II, 1939 to 1945, the Nazi Party was outlawed, and many of its top officials were convicted of war crimes related to the murder of some 6 million European Jews during the Holocaust. Now, the origins of the party, once again, in 1919, Army veteran Adolf Hitler, frustrated by Germany's defeat in World War I, which had left the nation economically depressed and politically unstable, joined a fledgling political organization called the German Workers' Party. It was founded earlier that same year by a small group of men, including a locksmith, Anton Drexler, and a journalist, Karl Herrer. The party promoted German nationalism and anti-Semitism, and felt that the Treaty of Versailles, the peace settlement that ended the war, was extremely unjust to Germany by burdening it with reparations it could never pay. Hitler soon emerged as a charismatic public speaker and began attracting new members with his speeches, blaming Jews and Marxists for Germany's problems and espousing extreme nationalism and the concept of an Aryan master race. In July 1921, he assumed leadership of the organization. By then, he had been renamed the National Socialist German Workers Nazi Party. Through the 1920s, Hitler gave speech after speech in which he stated that unemployment, rampant inflation, hunger, and economic stagnation in post-war Germany would continue until there was a total revolution in German life. Most problems could be solved, he explained, if communists and Jews were driven from the nation. His fiery speeches swelled the ranks of the Nazi Party, especially among young, economically disadvantaged Germans. Many dissatisfied former army officers in Munich joined the Nazis, including Ernst Röhm, the man responsible for creating the Stormtroopers, which was the strong arm that Adolf Hitler used to protect party meetings and attack political opponents. In 1923, Hitler and his followers staged the Beer Hall Putsch in Munich, which was a failed takeover of the government in Bavaria, a state in southern Germany. Hitler hoped that the Putsch, or coup d'etat, would spark a larger revolution against the national government. In the aftermath of the Beer Hall Putsch, Hitler was convicted of treason and sentenced to 5 years in prison, but spent less than a year behind bars, during which time he dictated the first volume of Mein Kampf, or My Struggle, his political autobiography. The publicity surrounding the Beer Hall Putsch and Hitler's subsequent trial turned him into a national figure. After release from prison, he set about rebuilding the Nazi Party and attempting to gain power through the election process. In 1929, Germany entered a period of severe economic depression and widespread unemployment. The Nazis capitalized on the situation by criticizing the ruling government and began to win elections. In July 1932, the Nazi Party elections, they were able to capture 230 out of 608 seats in the Reichstag, or the German Parliament building. In January 1933, Hitler was appointed German Chancellor, and his Nazi government soon came to control under every aspect of German life. Under Nazi rule, all other political parties were banned. In 1933, the Nazis opened their first concentration camp in Dachau, Germany, to house political prisoners. Dachau evolved into a death camp where countless thousands of Jews died from malnutrition, disease, and overwork, or were executed. In addition to Jews, the camp's prisoners included members of other groups Hitler considered unfit for the new Germany, including artists, intellectuals, gypsies, the physically and mentally handicapped, and homosexuals. Once Hitler gained control of the government, he directed Nazi Germany foreign policy toward undoing the Treaty of Versailles and restoring Germany's standing in the world. He railed against the treaty's redrawn map of Europe and argued it denied Germany, Europe's most populous state, their living space for its growing population was being hindered. Although the Treaty of Versailles was explicitly based on the principle of the self-determination of peoples, he had pointed out that it had separated Germans from other Germans by creating such new post-war states as Austria and Czechoslovakia, where many Germans currently lived. From the mid to late 1930s, Hitler undermined the post-war international order step by step. He withdrew Germany from the League of Nations in 1933. He rebuilt German armed forces beyond what was permitted by the Treaty of Versailles. He reoccupied the German Rhineland in 1936. He annexed Austria in 1938 and invaded Czechoslovakia in 1939. When Nazi Germany moved toward Poland, Great Britain and France countered further aggression by guaranteeing Polish security. Nevertheless, Germany invaded Poland on September 1, 1939, and Great Britain and France declared war on Germany. 6 years of Nazi Party foreign policy had ignited World War II. After conquering Poland, Hitler focused on defeating Britain and France. As the war expanded, the Nazi Party formed alliances with Japan and Italy in the Tripartite Pact of 1940 and honored its 1939 Nazi-Soviet Non-Aggression Pact with the Soviet Union until 1941, when Germany launched a massive blitzkrieg invasion of the Soviet Union. In the brutal fighting that followed, Nazi troops tried to realize the long-held goal of crushing the world's major communist power. After the United States entered the war in 1941, Germany found itself fighting in North Africa, Italy, France, the Balkans, and in a counterattacking Soviet Union. At the beginning of the war, Hitler and his Nazi Party were fighting to dominate Europe. 5 years later, they were fighting to just exist. When Hitler and the Nazi Party came into power in 1933, they instituted a series of measures aimed at persecuting Germany's Jewish citizens. By late 1938, Jews were banned from most public places in Germany. During the war, the Nazis' anti-Jewish campaigns increased in scale and in ferocity. In the invasion and the occupation of Poland, German troops shot thousands of Polish Jews, confined many to ghettos where they were starved to death, and began sending others to death camps in various parts of Poland where they were either immediately or forced into slave labor. In 1941, when Germany invaded the Soviet Union, Nazi death squads machine-gunned tens of thousands of Jews in the western regions of Soviet Russia. In early 1942, at the Wannsee Conference near Berlin, the Nazi Party decided on the last phase of what it called the final solution of the Jewish problem, and spelled out plans for the systematic murder of all European Jews in the Holocaust. In 1942 and 1943, Jews in the Western occupied countries, including France and Belgium, were deported by the thousands to the death camps that were mushrooming across Europe. In Poland, huge death camps such as Auschwitz began operating with ruthless efficiency. The murder of Jews in German-occupied lands stopped only in last months of the war. As the German armies were retreating towards Berlin, by the time Hitler committed suicide in April 1945, some 6 million Jews had died. After the war, the Allies occupied Germany. They outlawed the Nazi Party and worked to purge its influence from every aspect of German life. The party's swastika flag quickly became a symbol of evil in modern post-war culture. Although Hitler killed himself before he could be brought to justice, a number of Nazi officials were convicted of war crimes in the Nuremberg trials, which took place in Nuremberg, Germany, from 1945 to 1949. That was an article that's wrote. You can find it on thehistorychannel.com. Amazing work went into this article. And I'll tell you this much, folks. We did our best to destroy the Nazi Empire. We did our best to outlaw the Nazi Party in Germany. So how is it that the same America that helped to end the reign of the Nazis allows the Nazis to survive in America? Think of it like this. Nowhere else in the world was a safe place for the remaining Nazi Party to be reestablished, remolded, refitted, and put back out into the public with a new face, like they could in America. They were able to use the First Amendment to hide themselves, to disguise themselves, and to protect themselves. And sure, there are plenty of white supremacist groups that are out there that are shoot-offs of the Nazi Party and the Ku Klux Klan. But to actually have had a Nazi Party and a member of this Nazi Party actually ran for president should tell you that the Nazis never really died off. Are we experiencing the Fourth Reich now of the Nazi Party? Maybe so. Shortly after Operation Paperclip, the Nazis were introduced into multiple facets of American culture. And yes, through the progression of technology, new rubber chemicals, and medical treatments, America advanced itself to become a superpower in the world and eventually the world superpower. However, history must be told that the bounty that we were able to gain from capturing Nazi scientists came off the backs of millions of dead Jews. And not just the Jewish extermination that the Nazi Party more than willfully tried to establish throughout Europe. They wanted to conquer the world. Now, there's a lot of interesting things that the Nazis did, and I think it's why they are a spectacular specimen of history. The Nazi Party was very influential. They're very flamboyant. They loved their uniforms. Everything that the Nazi Party did had a meaning to it. It had this interesting, unique way of drawing people to them. The officers were very charismatic. The uniforms were very flashy and charismatic. There was a lot of superstition and fear built up around the SS. And rightly so, there was a lot of magic and sorcery that was involved in the SS. And all from Heinrich Himmler's head, who was originally just a humble chicken farmer. Now, we have to consider that in history, things can be repeated, but things also must not be forgotten. And that is going to be the entire goal of this. We are going to try and to reinvigorate people's love of history. And I hope that as we go through the Nazi Empire, that you will then take it upon yourself to do your own further investigations into it. You may find that the Nazi bell and the influence of possible aliens that Nazi scientists were telling the OSS, the I guess you could say future CIA, their involvement with, quote, aliens. You may find that the Nazi superstructures, which were things that just should not have been built in that time of day, that time of period, were still built, are just fascinating from an engineer aspect. There are one thing we will cover are the Nazi scientists, Dr. Mengele. There are a few others that are out there. We're actually going to discover medical breakthroughs that the Nazis were able to give the world. We're going to talk about the attempts of cloning. We're going to talk about the horrific experiments Dr. Mengele did upon children and the reasons for why he was able to do it. All that and more we are going to discuss. I am pulling a lot of information from a lot of resources. Now, the information that I'm pulling are archived in history books, on the History Channel, the Holocaust Museum, papers that the military currently still has. And I'm going to pull all these sources together, and I'm going to try and narrate it in a way that it's, you know, interesting to listen to. Hopefully you don't fall asleep driving while you're listening to my voice. But I'm going to share all this at once with you because I find that when people go into the realm of investigating Nazi Germany, we focus quite a bit on the Holocaust. We focus quite a bit on Adolf Hitler. We focus quite a bit on the military conquests that the Nazi Party was able to gain through their military. But there are bits and pieces of information out there that does not make sense that they dwelled into that you should find very interesting. The Nazis were out-of-the-box thinkers, literally. They opened Pandora's box when it came to scientific methodologies and spiritual madness. Now, these guys were completely out of control, even to the extent, and we'll cover this, of the Nazi Bible and the coordination of Catholic cardinals in Rome, in Italy, and how they actually approved of the Nazi Party. Now, like I said, we're gonna get into all this, and this isn't a dig against Catholics. It's just history, and history sometimes sucks. I think one of the reasons why God really is pulling me in this direction of going over the Nazi Empire is because there are just too many coincidences and too many conspiracy theories out there that Americans really aren't looking at, they really aren't paying attention to, and Americans say, well, you know, January 6th was just whatever, But I want you to understand something. There are quite a few political attacks, economic depressions, testing of vaccines, internment camps, corruption within law enforcement that are parallels of Nazi Germany. I, for one, believe that after the fall of the Nazi Empire in the late 40s, the Nazis escaped to America, they escaped to Russia, they escaped to South America. Some will even tell you that they escaped to Antarctica, where there was an actual submarine port in Antarctica, where the wolves of the sea, their submarines, were actually found going to. I don't want to get too much into that yet because I don't want to spoil it for you. But all that being said, the parallels are just, they're too in your face to ignore. We have politicians who are so on the bounds of being Nazi-ish and supporting Nazi-like ideology that it just makes me think, did the Nazi Party ever really die? Obviously they didn't. Shortly after the Nazi scientists were brought to America, the Nazi Party was reestablished in America. Even prior to all that, we had Roosevelt, who was a very, very big fan of Adolf Hitler, actually threw a ticker tape parade for Adolf Hitler when the Nazis won their original political campaigns, and were pen pals. Now, Roosevelt was also a bit of a fan of Mussolini and his version of socialism. Roosevelt himself was a socialist. So, you know, when we look at the history of America, we are always told about the patriotic stuff and the flag waving and salute your veterans and be nice to people. But what you, I think what people fail to realize, America has not been America for a very long time. Americans are still Americans, but the foundation of America has been changed by political elitists, that has been changed by the military-industrial complex. They were successful with Nazi Germany, but a madman ran the regime. Imagine, if you will, what if Adolf Hitler did not end up losing his mind right there close to the end of the war, and he was a stable person instead of a mentally unstable person, and he slowly grew the Nazi Empire instead of quickly growing the Nazi Empire. Would we still have a Nazi Empire? If the Nazis had developed the nuclear bomb, the atom bomb, before we did, and we dropped it on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, would they have dropped it on America? And if so, what would America look like now? There are some fairly good books that are out there that describe this, and I think The Man in the High Castle is one of those TV series that, you know, it drifts into the what-ifs and the maybes if the Nazis had won World War II. I do think that it's something we need to consider in modern-day history. And we need to discuss it because we obviously have a rise of political extremism in America. And the political extremists are saying that the patriots of America are the extremists. This is something that is going to eventually foreshadow a civil war in America. I say all that to say this. If the Nazi Party is still around, they're just underground. in America goes through a state of civil war, what rises out of the ashes of America? Is it one phoenix or is it hundreds? Which political parties can survive the fall of America? Which political parties will be allowed to survive and to prosper? Because surely if America falls into civil war, we will have elements of different factions of political movements that are aligned with either original American values or communist. You're also going to see National Socialists, the Nazi Party. There will be multiple, multiple racist-based groups, not just the Ku Klux Klan or the Nazi Party. And all that and more is already here. We already have La Raza, which is the Hispanic-Mexican version of the Nazi Party, and it's called The Race, La Raza. Now, that's another racist movement. There is a anti-white black movement going on in America. There's also the white supremacist movements in America. And I'll tell you something that people don't talk about too much, but communist China is an extremely racist country. Extremely racist country. But it's not talked about. They're very sneaky about it because they don't really have to talk about it. They just do whatever they want. All these things are very interesting to me because they're not going to be talked about on Fox News. They're not going to be talked about on CNN. Like I said, me and some others out there, especially Dave Hodges, we are going to start to dig up the bones of the Nazis. We're going to attempt to uncover as much as possible, and I think we're going to really shine a new light on the depth of depravity and just the absolute insaneness of the Nazi Party. Now, I would like to share with you real quick, there's a timeline here that will play into a big role of the Nazi Party. And in the aftermath of the Holocaust, Germany's military generals claimed that they had fought honorably in World War II, and they insisted that the SS, which was the Nazi elite, also part of the law enforcement wing of the Nazi government, led by Heinrich Himmler, were responsible for almost every war crime, and that Germany's military's hands were clean. Now, I say that because we are potentially going to have internment camps in America for COVID. We are potentially going to have a civil war in America. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And when we have military and law enforcement and whoever else fighting against their own citizens, they're going to say that their hands were clean. And there will always be that one group that takes everything too far, that murders and rapes and tortures people, kidnaps people, sets their homes on fire, kills all the livestock. There's always that group. But you'll be linked because you'll be under the direction of the same party. So that's my warning for all you listening. If it comes to choosing sides, and you're stuck with choosing the government or choosing America, I would choose the country over the government. You cannot be a good guy in a bad government. I've said that a couple times, but that's one of the reasons why I got out. So while we have a little bit of time left, Let's go over a timeline here. World War I started in 1914 and ended in 1918, was one of the most destructive wars in modern history. Initial enthusiasm on all sides for a quick and decisive victory faded as the war devolved into a stalemate of costly battles and trench warfare, particularly on the Western Front. Over 9 million soldiers died, a figure which by far exceeds the military deaths in all the wars of the previous 100 years combined. The enormous losses on all sides resulted in part from the introduction of new weapons, such as chemical weapons, and weapons like the machine gun or gas warfare, as well as from the failure of military leaders to adjust their tactics to the increasingly mechanized nature of warfare, which was also the introduction of tanks. The Great War was a defining experience for the German military. It was perceived failures on the battlefield and the home front shaped its beliefs about the war, and it informed its interpretation of the relationship between civilians and between soldiers. A little quick interesting note, my grandfather fought in World War One. Both my grandfathers fought in World War II, but Papa, my great-grandfather, was a ammo cart driver, and he had a team of mules. And if you've ever seen those old pictures of the mules with the gas mask, and they're dragging a cart, that's what my great-grandfather used to do. October 1916, the German military's Jewish census. During World War I, approximately 100,000 of the roughly 600,000 soldiers who served in German military were Jewish. Many were German patriots who saw the war as an opportunity to prove their loyalty to their country. However, anti-Semitic newspapers and politicians claimed that Jews were cowards who were shirking their duty by staying away from combat. To prove this claim, the Minister of War began an investigation into the number of Jews serving on the front lines. For these reasons that are not clear, the results were never published, which allowed anti-Semites to continue to question Jewish patriotism even after the war. By November 11, 1918, the armistice and the stab in the back legend were after more than 4 years of fighting, an armistice, or a ceasefire, between defeated Germany and the Entente powers went into effect in November 11th, 1918. For the people of Germany, the defeat was an enormous shock. They had been told that victory was inevitable. One way some Germans made sense of their sudden defeat was through this, quote, stab in the back legend. The legend claimed that internal enemies, primarily Jews and communists, had sabotaged the war effort. In truth, German military leaders convinced the German emperor to seek peace because they knew that Germany could not win the war, and they feared the country's imminent collapse. Many of these same military leaders then spread the stab in the back legend to deflect blame for the defeat away from the military. By June 28, 1919, the Treaty of Versailles was signed. Now, the Treaty of Versailles, which ended World War I, was signed on June 28, 1919, where Germany's newly formed democratic government saw the treaty as a dictated peace with harsh terms. In addition to other provisions, the treaty artificially limited German military power. It restricted Germany to have an army that was up to about 100,000 volunteer force with a maximum of 4,000 officers who were each required to serve for 25 years. This was intended to prevent the German army from using rapid turnover to train more officers. The treaty forbade production of tanks, poisonous gas, armored cars, airplanes, and submarines, and the import of weapons. It dissolved the elite planning section of the German army, known as the General Staff, and closed the military academies and other training institutions. The treaty demanded the demilitarization of the Rhineland, forbidding German military forces from being stationed along the border with France. These changes greatly limited the career prospects of the German military officers. Now, by January 1st, 1921, the German military was established, which was, you know, more or less the German Republic being reestablished, known as the Weimar Republic. July 27, 1929, the Geneva Convention in Switzerland was signed. Now, Germany and other leading countries signed the convention relative to the treatment of prisoners of war in Geneva, and the international agreement built on the earlier Hague Conventions of 1899 and 1907 to increase protections for prisoners of war. The convention was one of several important international agreements regulating war in the 1920s. And one of those things that's really interesting is because the war was so brutal in World War One that no one was surrendering at all. And, you know, we had all different types of introductions of new weapons, especially the use of the combat shotgun, which was a 12-gauge shotgun that the U.S. military troops were using in trench warfare that had, I think, an 18 to 20-inch bayonet. The shotgun was so effective that the Germans requested to stop using the shotgun. So for all you shotgun lovers out there, beware. It does work. We have ran out of time. We are going to continue to cover some really cool subjects tomorrow and probably for the next couple of weeks. Like I said, please join me on uncovering and investigating the Nazi Empire. Please spread the message of this channel. We're really trying to get our name out there. And, you know, I appreciate anyone who listens. I appreciate all the feedback. And this is American Vindicta. I'm Doug Thornton. Out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.